not.
The Beatles.
Circuses on the air.
When the president does it.
Sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Oh, we're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
China's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And on this Easter weekend, Dave Schwann joins us. Well, and we're going to talk some Easter TV classics this morning, but first, let's start off with in 1800, the Library of Congress was started with a mere $500 investment.
Think about that, $5,000.
That was a lot of money back then.
It was. It was. The nation's oldest federal cultural institution serves as a research arm of Congress. It also is the largest library in the world.
I was going to say, still isn't the largest, it was at one time.
Books, yeah. Recordings, photographs, maps, manuscripts, and its collections. It's amazing. Like, I went on a tour in D.C. a couple years ago, and you know, you can look down into the library and the research. Oh, my God. It's spectacular.
Yeah.
Spectacular.
Yeah. And I think of the shot in All the President's Men where Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman Woodward and Bernstein pouring over documents, and the camera moves away gradually to pull back just to show them little specks in this mammoth-sized room with documents just surrounding them.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it just is.
With just a small token of cash to open that up.
Yeah.
1865. This is always a fascinating story that we discuss. Chicago's Crosby Opera House. Do you remember this one?
Mm-hmm.
So it was beset by bad timing throughout its entire
existence. Oh, bad luck from beginning to end. Yeah.
Yeah. So April 1865, with a performance by an Italian opera troupe, the premiere was postponed 3 days because of the assassination first of
Abraham Lincoln.
Crosby ran into several business difficulties as a result of what the Chicago Tribune called his disastrous failure in 1866. He was forced to sell the building. A group of prominent Chicagoans who wished to assist him arranged a sale by lottery. Tickets cost $5, which is a lot of money back then, again, right?
Sure.
A piece, and approximately 210,000 tickets were purchased by individuals in Chicago and throughout the country.
How about that?
25,000 by Crosby himself. The selection of the winner took place in the theater in 1867, before a packed audience. The excitement in the great room was there, of course. The winner was A.H. Lee from Prairie du Rocher, Illinois.
Prairie du Rocher.
Prairie du Rocher.
Way south.
Way tip of the state.
Down there.
Who sold the building back to Crosby for $200,000, which was considerably less than Crosby's proceeds from the lottery. So he made money and then got to keep his opera house, which was interesting. Yeah. So it looks like his luck was better, right?
Yeah. I also think Lincoln himself was there.
Was that right?
He never came back to Chicago after being president. But before, you know, he became president, he was in Chicago a lot on business and always, or many times,
theater.
Wanted to take time for a little entertainment and see a show. And
yeah,
I believe he was there, yes.
Well, the anticipated reopening was scheduled for October 9th and then came the Chicago Fire.
Fire. Right. That was it.
And he was done. He was checked out. 1878, the White House Easter egg roll was introduced. Now, do you remember who introduced it? Which president, Dave?
I want to say Grover Cleveland.
President Rutherford B. Hayes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was
all
Hayes.
Right. I was a little off.
Yep. By the mid-1870s. Well, it was, all started in, the original site was the grounds of the United States Capitol, actually. And by the mid-1870s, the egg-rolling activities on the West Terraces had gained notoriety as the children turned the Capitol grounds into their Easter morning playground. It was first held during the administration of President Andrew Johnson. It was Rutherford B. Hayes that took it to the White House and made it a national tradition.
Okay.
Now, speaking of Easter, in 1950, the song Here Comes Peter Cottontail was composed by Steve Nelson and Jack Rollins. Now, due to the immense popularity of Gene Autry's Christmas songs Here Comes Santa Claus and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Nelson and Rollins asked Autry to record their song as well. Now, his version peaked at number 3 on the Billboard Hot Country Singles chart and at number 5 on the Billboard Top 100 chart. And years later, there was a version of Peter Cottontail produced by the same company that brought us Hard Rock Coco and Joe, Susie Snowflake, and Frosty. The company was called Centaur Productions, and it aired around Easter on WGN-TV's Garfield, Goose, and Friends. Now, it did not have the long-lasting tradition of the Christmas classics, but it is a classic all its own. It's available as part of the Hard Rock Coco and Joe Susie Snowflake DVD from the Museum of Broadcast Communications here in Chicago, and you can get that at museum.tv. And now, in all its glory, and here's the rarely heard and seen version where Peter's tail is shot off by a hunter. Very touching. Here's Peter Cottontail.
Hippity hop, hopping down the trail. Hippity hop, hopping down the trail.
Down the trail.
Oh, what a smart little bunny. Da, 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 da. He's the king of Rabbit Town.
Look at Peter Cottontail.
Hopping down the bunny trail.
Hippity hopping on his merry way.
Peter Cottontail. He's the king of Bunny Land. Cause his eyes are shiny and he can spot the wolf a mile away. When the others go for clover and the big bad wolf appears, he's the one that's watching over, giving signals with his ears.
That's my folks in Rabbit Town. Feel so free when he's around.
Peter's helping someone every day. Hey, did you know we got a rabbit? He's brave and he's smart.
Look at him hop. He sure looks cool.
He's no fool. He's been to school.
He's out looking. He's a-looking for a big bad wolf. There may be more. Hippity hop, hopping on his way. He can spot a wolf about a mile away. When the big bad wolf appears, look out. Look out. Everyone knows for miles around, he's the king of Rabbit Town. Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail, happened to stop for carrots on the way. Peter Cottontail, something told him it was wrong. Farmer Jones might come along. What an awful price he'd have to pay. Poor Bunny. But he knew his legs were faster, so he nibbled 3 or 4. And he almost met disaster when he heard that shotgun roar. That's how Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail, lost his tail, but still he got away. Buckwah. Hippity hop down the trail. Hoppin', hoppin' down the trail. Hippity hop,
you got tail. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology.
I've got two more things to wrap up. 1963, the Beatles met the Rolling Stones for the first time. So the Beatles and the Stones met during a Rolling Stones performance at the Crawdaddy Club. Bill Wyman says we all got nervous, but then we had
63.
But then we all had a chat with them afterwards and stayed up all night talking and became really good mates.
Good mates.
Good mates. They were rapping, is what they said.
Yeah.
And became really good mates.
That was before the Ed Sullivan appearance then.
Oh, yeah.
63.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow. 1985, Fraser Thomas died. He was born in 1919. It would have been 100.
Right.
Yeah. Here is, real quick, a news clip of the day, because Fraser died, I think, before the show or during the filming of a Bozo show. He collapsed in the hallway and was taken to the hospital.
I'd heard the hallway or the parking lot of WGN-TV.
Something like that. Let's take a quick listen about that day.
Tonight, WGN bids farewell to a man who, through his dedication and concern for his audience, became an institution in the entertainment business. Frazier Thomas, the longtime master of ceremonies on The Bozo Show and host of Family Classics, passed away this morning at 10:01 after suffering a major stroke here on Monday morning. He was 66 years old. A native of Rushville, Indiana, Frazier began his career at the age of 12 as a kid magician. Later, he found radio, beginning his broadcast career at WLW in Cincinnati. And then, in 1954, Frazier moved into Chicago and on WGN launched a children's program.
There we go. So that was just a little bit of Frazier Thomas. Now, a couple years ago, I spoke to children's TV historian Jim Engel about the legacy of Frazier Thomas and an exhibit in his honor at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. And then there's Frazier's jacket that's there as well. What are all the medals representing on his jacket?
Well, that's interesting. You know, if you see the earlier photos of Frazier, he was wearing what looked like a satin, almost like a circus guy's costume. And it evolved and into the more serious looking, almost like a business suit, but then it had the epaulets and all the medals and stuff. And he would say...
And some nicotine stains, by the way.
Oh yeah, but you never see any of that stuff on TV, right? Never look at the armpits of these costumes.
No, good Lord.
But he had all these medals, and he said in interviews that they were all actual service medals. Now, they were, you know, he picked them up. But see, I love this too, because Frazier didn't just go to the antique store and buy a bunch of stuff and stick it on his costume like anybody else would have done. He actually went out of his way to find stuff that actually seemed legit, because that's the kind of persona that he was, you know?
That's funny. Now, there's a clip we're going to play. It's about a pie. It kind of set that up
for us. Oh, yeah. This is, you know, the tragedy is that after all those years, only the partials of four different shows exist.
And how many were there approximately? Do you know? Out of
24 years, you know, 5 days a week, even with breaks and reruns. I know they did tape stuff so that they could run it during vacations and summers, but I'm not that good at math. But it's safe to say hundreds and hundreds and very little left. What's great about the clip that you're going to play, and I don't know, you know, fill in for the people who don't see it, some of this on the radio, but this is Garfield Goose in a nutshell. This is a great premise. Gar takes a couple of pie tins. They've got to make a bunch of pies for something, and they attach one to top to bottom. This way they can cook two each in the oven. And Frazier's reactions on screen are priceless, and the whole interaction between Gar and Rom is priceless. And also the way that Roy manipulates Gar when Frazier points out how to screwed up idea this is. But unfortunately, there's not a lot of this stuff around. So for me, in the surviving clips, and you know, again, this will be on radio, but this is the quintessential Garfield Goose clip.
All right, let's take a little listen.
And a Burger King Whopper. By far the best.
That's good advice. Enjoy a creamy, thick shake and some piping hot French fries with your Whopper. Whenever you're hungry, you look for the famous King on a Bun.
That's great.
That means I know. Burger King. He was the best pitch man.
That is a sign of good food. Try it, will you? All right. Howdy-dum-dum. What seems to be... What'd he say? How would I like to invest in $1 million idea? $1 million idea. He's had another $1 million idea. Like what? Yeah, what'd he say? Necessity is the mother of invention. What's that got to do with the price of rice in China? What is that? His mama needs to bake 25... Yeah, the gooey, chewy mulberry pies. Sure, she needs to bake 25, and we don't know how she's going to do it. So what? What'd he say? He has invented a new invention which will enable her to do this. What'd he say? And she can do it in half the time. Now, how are you going to bake 25... gooey, chewy mulberry pies in half the time? It takes just so long to bake a pie. No. You'll show me if I promise not to divulge the secret until he can patent it? Oh, I'd never tell a soul. Believe me, your secret is safe with me.
It's funny, the pacing of the show and the way this went. It was, I don't want to say it was slow, but it was very methodical along the way. And
for the time, it would not have been slow. But the thing that, you know, when people ask me about the difference between current shows and old shows, the first thing you'll notice when you watch any old show from the 50s or 60s is that they take their time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And may, you know, part of that is you got a lot of time.
They had like 27 minutes. Yeah, there was a lot of commercial time
every day. But yeah, you know, Sesame Street ushered in this kind of like machine gun fire version of video and no attention span. So
true. Now there was a little theater screen, which was by the way a publication you did for quite some time.
Yeah. Well, we did one issue, and it was a great issue. But we named it the little theater screen because you know, it's such a resonant thing for people. And for those of you who maybe need a little prodding, whenever they would go to a cartoon or one of the features, Journey to the Beginning of Time or whatever, he'd ask for the little theater screen and be handed to him by an off camera stagehand. And actually, it was just like a white screen on it with a black frame. He'd hang it on a little peg or nail on the set, and then they'd zoom in on it, and then the cartoon would start. Which again, just kind of an interesting, unique way to present the cartoons.
Absolutely.
Know?
Now, the first clip we played was Clutch Cargo, which, you know. Even today, when friends were joking about some of the stuff, Clutch Cargo come up in conversation.
Clutch Cargo. Well, you know, the clip you played, half the voices in that were Hal Smith, who people, if nothing else, remember as Otis the Drunk.
Yeah,
the
from Andy Griffith.
Show. Yeah. Well, early television in all forms is full of interesting approaches to get things done. So when they started making cartoons for television, they had looked for cost-cutting devices. This is why Hanna-Barbera created limited animation. And so Clutch Cargo, the Synchrovox system, was superimposing the actors' mouths onto the cartoons, which people find, you know, ridiculous, repugnant. I love Clutch Cargo. Yeah. It was probably my favorite thing on Garfield Goose besides the puppets. And
Conan O'Brien kind of did.
Oh, sure.
Still does that, actually.
It's easy to make fun of this stuff, but I don't know. I was willing to suspend my disbelief, even though they all were wearing lipstick, even the guys.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, now there was also Spinner and Paddlefoot, and that was played by Margaret Carey, who was Tinkerbell.
Tinkerbell didn't have a voice, but Margaret Carey was the model that the animators looked at. But yeah, she did Spinner, who was a little boy. She's also the female characters on the shows, whether they're Egyptian princesses, and she was also Crystal, the girlfriend on Space Angel, which is another Synchrovox cartoon that the listeners, I'm sure, remember.
So much fun to watch, though. I mean, it was just these little adventures that they go on. I loved when that came on.
Yeah, well, Clutch Cargo was kind of like the Indiana Jones. You know, the character in the context of the cartoons was an international traveler and explorer, you know, so they could go anywhere. They could be in ancient Egypt, or they could be in a haunted castle.
So there were 52 adventures. It was obviously methodically done for television.
Five parts.
Yeah.
They all had a cliffhanger ending.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Yes, they did. Aside from everything else, Frasier hosted this really great family classics program that that was on for
that music. Just
years.
Hearing that music. Well, it started in 61. I what I find interesting is that Frasier was you know, on that show, well, in general, but so literate, so authoritative on that show, and yet 5 days of the week he was the same guy sitting in a costume talking to a goose. But there wasn't a problem with that, you know what I mean? It was all of the same cloth, and that was Frasier, you know.
It was a Friday night show. I remember it really on Sunday afternoons myself. Yeah. One of the stagehands had told me when we were setting up for Bozo, Gar, and Ray, when we brought all the props back over there, that Frasier often did the show live in many of those years, and he'd order pizza for the staff and so forth. So they would, you know, to be able to do that and do that live, that's something you usually could tape and then air later, but he showed up on Sunday and did
the
show.
That doesn't really surprise me. You know, that perfectionist thing works both ways. It gives you perfection in one setting like this, and, you know, maybe a little different on Bozo, but he was perfect for it, you know?
The legacy of Chicago TV legend Frasier Thomas with historian Jim Engel. Well, we hope we helped you out there escape from what's going on in our world right now. Dave, have a great weekend and happy Easter, pal.
Okay, Dave.
Thanks, buddy.
You bet.